And it's the Table Breakers, they've done it again.
Is this the biggest panel we've ever had on, Jason?
One day you have a guy throwing mid-70s, and next week you have a guy throwing 55-mile fastballs.
Hello again, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Ball Caps and Bagpipes. It's a Scottish baseball podcast. I'm your host, John McKellar, and I'm alongside my returning co-host, Jason Dare, back for his American adventures.
Hello, good to see you guys again. What did I miss?
Well, we've actually crowned two league champions in the time you've been away, so we're going to get into that just shortly. We're once again joined by our guest co-host, Danny Quinn, manager of the single A Glasgow Comets.
How you doing, guys? You good?
Very good indeed. We are also joined by a very special guest this week, Brian Clark, who is a Glasgow Galaxy alum, but more recently has gone into the umpiring side of things. Say hi, Brian.
Hi, everyone. Hi, John. Thanks for inviting me on.
It's excellent having you on, man. It's we're going to have a nice, I think, a great chat in just a bit. Before we do, let's first off go into the scores from the last 2 weeks' games. Two very crucial weeks, as it turns out, in the 2023 season. We'll start with AAA on the 6th of August, which is just over a week ago. The Edinburgh Cannons defeated the Comets 1-0 in as tight a game as you're going to see. It just feels like the Cannons and Comets at AAA level are incapable of having anything other than an absolute slugfest, an absolute classic of a game together. So yet another close game between the Cannons and Comets. This one, the Cannons scraped through as winners, 1-0. The Breakers, meanwhile, they defeated the Galaxy 9-7 in AAA. I don't know if you managed to see any of that game, Jason, because I think you were still on the plane, I think, at the time that would have been going on.
Most likely. I was probably still in Chicago, or I was actually flying back at that point. So, no, I was in Chicago at that point.
Right, but somebody that I know was there is guest co-host Danny Quinn. Do you want to give us your thoughts on that game, that particular game, the 1-0 Cannons win?
Yeah, it was a really, really tight game, man, just really dominated by really solid pitching. We had David on the mound that gave up a run in the first inning, and that was it. The Cannons held us hitless, were it not for Matt Gill from our single A coming into the triple A, and he got picked up a couple of hits. He was the only one in our lineup that managed to do it. So just a really tight game, and it was just hard. Hits were hard to come by. There was only 5 hits scattered between our teams. So what can you do, man? Just seeing it, the hard games, you know, and yeah, congrats to the Cannons. It was one of those really tense matchups that could have swung either way at any minute, but they held us out and they got the win.
Now, the 6th of August, it wasn't all bad for the Comets. In the single A game earlier in the day, Comets defeated the Knights 10-5. That's a significant result for yourself, Danny, especially because you are the manager of the single A Comets, and it meant that the Comets, for the first time in the team's history, achieved a league win. Tell me what that means to you.
Massive, massive. It's something, obviously, the past 2 seasons in the single A. So last season we came within 1 game and we lost out to Tayport. And the year before, in the first year of the Development League, we were within a game and we lost to Edinburgh. I think it was the Devils at the time. It was before the Knights. So we just kept getting consistently close and close and then just falling at that last hurdle. So, you know, we went behind 5-0 in the first 2 innings, and we kind of regrouped and we had a meeting off to the side, and we just decided to park, you know, those 5 runs at the side and just do what we can. And the guys rallied round and came back. And for me, you know, having invested so much into trying to help coach the single A as well as manager and pitch in it as well, it's just a massive achievement and overjoyed to be able to help the guys get there and ultimately get what I feel they've deserved all season, given their results, man. So, yeah, over the moon with.
Now, you mentioned a comeback from 5-0 down early. Worth note, I think, is the fact that it's an exact reverse almost of what happened on the last day of last season, because on the last day of last season in single A, the Comets went up 5-0 quite early and then dropped that game 7-5. This time around, Comets go down 5-0 early and come back to win the game 10-5 in the end. How did you, I mean, because you closed out the last two innings on the mound. Was that, that had to have been in the back of your mind that had happened last year and trying to avoid the same situation again?
Yeah, I think it's a consequence of experience. Like, I've been in that position now in the past two seasons where I've been on the mound with the opportunity to try and help close it out and I haven't been able to do it. And previously I would have felt really nervous, but you know, we've worked hard all season for myself. I feel more comfortable pitching in that league than I did certainly even at the start of the season. So it becomes a really easy thing to do when you are put in the mound and try to get six outs and, you know, your offence has put five runs behind you. But I think it is just one of those things where all season we've found ourselves in really pressurised situations. It's not as if we've steamrolled competition. A lot of our games, you know, against the likes of Galaxy, we won the week before 2-1. They've been very tense situations, so we've just been a lot more experienced at operating under pressure. So, yeah, there was when I got on the mound, you always think it can go either way, can't it? You never take anything for granted, but I was fairly comfortable with my defence behind me, and I was just trying to ultimately get the hits to put it on the ground to the defence because I knew that they could do a job in the infield and outfield. So, yeah, happy days.
So we're going to get into the scores from the following week where we also crowned our AAA champions. Before we do, though, just remind us, who scored what turned out to be the winning run?
For the Comets title? John, I can't really remember that. I'm sure that if somebody did score the winning run, I'd say it was yourself, they would have told me at the time and they would have texted me repeatedly afterwards and they would have continuously reminded me for days and days afterwards. But I can't think of a name that comes to mind, to be honest.
That does sound like something I would do, Danny. Anyway, the following week, just yesterday, the Comets were victorious in Tripoli, 15-2 win over the Oilers on an absolutely gorgeous day in Aberdeen. You were there, Danny. What's your thoughts on that game?
Yeah, the Oilers, they're going to be a really good team. They're obviously a developing team and they've got a lot of young players. And I was saying to a few of the guys on the way back, you know, if you can keep those young players interested and, you know, let them develop, then they're going to be a really good team. They just need that time to develop. Their pitching's really good. You know, they've got Matt up there. He's a really good pitcher. I know Cairo sometimes pitches as well, so it just came down to a bit of experience. We just kept that a lot tighter, I think, defensively. And Aberdeen, you know, done their thing. And they pitched well and they got contact on us and they did get on base, but we were just able to pull away with it in the end.
And certainly the Devils, they managed to beat the Breakers in, I think, quite an upset result. 7-6 was the final score there. Jason, you've probably been around the Devils more than anyone else. They obviously have had their issues throughout the season, but they've started to come onto a game recently.
I think they just needed some time to gel together and have the season go. You know, it was a bunch of new guys that really wanted to, you know, prove themselves this year. So I think it just took a little bit. The vibe was good, from what I understand, and I think once they've all meshed, they started playing good baseball.
For sure, and certainly the result of the weekend: Canons 13, Galaxy 2. With that win, the Canons, who remain to this point undefeated, it's not a whole lot of season left, so we'll see if they can hold on to that. But they have become the 2023 AAA champions, so another title for your Canons, Jason.
That's good. We knew it was going to be a competitive season. I'm proud of the guys to say that, you know, they were able to pull it off out there. I knew it was going to be a tight season all the way around that. So from what I understand, everything's been pretty good baseball this season, and I'm glad to see that both, you know, the AAA and the Single A are being very competitive. Just nice to see that, you know, over the years we've actually improved and it's actually become a good product on the field.
Has it been competitive in AAA? The Canons have been practically unstoppable this year. Are you surprised by just how dominant they've been? Because they've been absolutely lights out in pretty much every game they've played.
I think they just have a very good team. I think it all goes in about 3 years. It seems to be a cycle. It was, you know, when I first started the Cannons, they were good for 3 years. And then, you know, the Devils went for 3 years. And then, you know, you guys were dominant for a long time. So it just seems to be a cyclical thing where, you know, you get somebody that can dominate pitching and keep it, you know, competitive there. So I imagine next year there'll be someone ready to knock them off. And, of course, you know, if you're on the top, everyone's aiming for you.
Yeah, it's easy. Getting there is easy, isn't it? That's the easy part. It's staying on top. It's always the tough part. But the Cannons certainly have been so consistent this year. Obviously, we talked about the 6th of August, that 1-0 game. Even in situations where they come up against a force like a David in the Comets, on the mound for the Comets, they only needed one run. They managed to shut the Comets down completely that day. So just a team that just knows how to win consistently, and they've done so well. So massive congratulations to the Cannons. That is title number, I believe, is it title number 6 for the Cannons?
Ooh, I don't know. I would say 4, but that may be pushing it there. So
they had won 3 straight with you.
Yeah.
I think this is 2 straight now, isn't it?
That makes 5 then. So I was
saying at least 5.
Yeah, so it'll be 5 league titles.
That's pretty special. That's an amazing record, that. So, yeah, Cannons, Triple-A champions 2023. And single-A yesterday, we had the Knights and the Breakers, and the Knights took that 8-4. So a big win for the Knights against the tremendous Breakers side. Those are the scores from the last 2 weekends. That's the first kind of segment over. Let's move on to our interview section. Tonight, again, we're joined by Brian Clark, drafted by Glasgow Galaxy. Talk to us a bit about how you first got involved, or how you first became interested, first off, Brian, in baseball.
So in baseball, so in 1999, I was a student just about to graduate, and I spent some time with family in Massachusetts. And while I was there, one of their family friends who was a school teacher took me on the Freedom Trailer in Boston, and the day ended with a trip to Fenway for a game. And it just happened that the game I went to see, my first ever baseball game, had Pedro Martinez pitching. And I think he threw something like 10 or 11 Ks that day. Jason Varitek catching him, and Nomar Garcia-Para at shortstop. So those guys became 3 of my favourite players of all time. And it was just an honour to see them in my very first game. And I just immediately caught the bug. It wasn't just the game, it was the atmosphere at Fenway, the entertainment, the concession stands, everything about it just really caught my imagination. And then when I came back to the UK, I just watched every minute of baseball I could. It was difficult back then with the TV coverage, but there was opportunities to watch baseball.
So you're talking Pedro, you're talking Varitek, you're talking Nomar. You're you know, at the latest, it's mid-2004 we're talking here. So you've been a fan for a long time. Tell me about how that then translates into becoming a player, because you joined the Galaxy a few years back. Tell me about how you became involved in the game in Scotland.
So if you'd asked me a week ago when I first started playing, I couldn't actually have told you what year it was, but I did look it up, and it was 2018. And essentially what happened is that my then 12-year-old son started watching baseball and then saw a Facebook post and said, "Oh, that'd be really, really interesting. Can I go along?" So I basically went to indoor training in February or March of 2018, just so he could go. And, you know, I met guys like Danny, I think you were there, John Nelson was there, JT was there, and it just felt really welcoming. So, of course, being a 12-year-old, my son gave it up after about 2 months. Essentially, when we moved from indoor to outdoor training, he realised this was a man's sport and not for a 12-year-old, and said he had better things to do. And I just really enjoyed it, really enjoyed the training, really enjoyed the bunch of guys. And I never intended to stick at it for as long as I have, but I just kept coming along to training, kept turning up to games, and just really caught the bug.
You did, you caught the bug, you stuck at it. Tell me about your memories of your first game with the Galaxy, because you were with the Galaxy pretty much from immediately. I don't think you ever... There's never any ambiguity about what team you were going to end up on, I don't think. Tell me about how you got started with the Galaxy, first off.
I think there were quite a few new players that year. I think a bunch of guys turned up, and I remember Andy Vaughan, for example. He'd played previously and then kind of dropped out a wee bit and he came back. So I remember meeting Andy at my first indoor training session. But there was probably about 6-7 new guys drafted to each team that year. The Galaxy was really welcoming. You had people like Luke who always comes up in these podcasts, people like JT, Jim Sehar, Jason, who was with the Galaxy at that time. It just a really nice environment, a really friendly bench. My first ever game, and obviously this was when there wasn't single A, triple A. This was, you know, single, I think it was 9-inning games in those days. So we would come on, you know, the 8th inning, 9th inning for half an inning in the field and one at bat. And my very first at bat was against, I think it was the Oilers, certainly one of the Aberdeen teams visiting Glasgow. And I got drilled by the first pitch. and I was told on the day that it was a deliberate hit by pitch based on something that happened the previous season, but I'm never sure if that was true or not. But
deliberate because you were Galaxy, Brian. That's what they give people with that uniform on.
So I was proud to get on base with my first ever at bat, but not in the nice way. But yeah, that was the memory. And I'm sure we'll get into it, but playing time was sketchy. You know, Galaxy were always excellent, particularly with the longer games, and particularly when Galaxy were quite dominant in those days. Quite often by the 8th, 9th inning, we were comfortably ahead and there was a chance for guys to get in for a half inning. But it's a long day where you're spending more time as a supporter than a player.
Yeah. Do you think then that yourself and a few of the folk that come along at the time that you do, do you feel that you were sort of hard done by, in a sense that they were so dominant? Or do you feel that that was a great learning experience to watch those players out there every week?
You might get different answers from different people. I'm a baseball fan first and foremost, so I like watching quality baseball, and we'll get into the umpiring a bit, but one of the advantages of being an umpire is you get a great view of the game, and you get the best view in the house of Danny's curveball, for example. So I just appreciate the technical aspects of the game. I love the game. I love to watch baseball. So I didn't really mind. And if I drove to Edinburgh and didn't get in the game, I didn't really care. Without naming names, there are guys who've come and gone over the years who did mind a bit more and probably didn't stick around as long as they might have done because they weren't getting opportunities to play. And like I said, I'm not going to name people, but I'm certainly aware that that's happened. But that's where the A, triple A, and hopefully in the future the double A will come in to afford more game time for these guys. Because certainly in the early days, there was people turning up, not getting game time, and then losing interest.
For sure. And I think it's a natural thing. Like you've mentioned, it's a long day, especially if you're travelling. It's a long day. And there's been people who've been in the Comet squad that felt they didn't get enough time and eventually sort of went by the wayside and stopped coming to games as well. It's just a natural thing. If you're there to play baseball, you want to be on the field playing. It's quite easy. It's quite straightforward. It's as simple as that. But nevertheless, moving on from that, tell me about your memories of just in particular winning those championships. I think you would have probably been there for the last two.
Yeah, it was three in a row, wasn't it? And I joined in the second year of that. So I guess the most iconic moment was Andrew Sweeney in his red top hat. He'd gone out. It was a game where we could clinch the championship in Edinburgh, and Sweeney had gone out the night before in Edinburgh and had woken up the next morning with a red top hat. I don't think he was ever able to explain where it had come from. And there were guys driving to the game that day, passing McDonald's in Edinburgh, saying, "Oh, look at that clown over there with the top hat on. Oh, it's Sweeney." So that just sticks in mind. That day is not actually the baseball. It's that iconic moment of Sweeney turning up at the field, and the post-game photos with beers, and right in the middle of it all is Sweeney as the kind of larger than life character with his big red top hat on. But ask me what happened in the game, I couldn't really tell you.
That's brilliant. So three straight titles that was for the Galaxy. There was obviously there were some high profile departures following that. Like you had Luke left, and I think Jim Sehar is more or less kind of wrap things up now. He was another crucial part of that team. I don't know how much time you actually spend among the Galaxy now, being that you're kind of focusing more on your umpiring duties, but how far away do you feel the Galaxy are from making another run like that at the top?
So I think if you compare the Galaxy at the start of the season to the Galaxy in the last few weeks, it's a completely transformed team. The Galaxy's always been about getting players in the game and getting players experience. So if you turn up to training, you turn up to games, you will get game time. But that's got to be balanced, I guess, being competitive and trying to win games and trying to get into playoffs. I think the core to the Galaxy has always been their American backbone. They've had an amazing run of American players. You mentioned Luke, obviously Jacob's been with the team for a number of years. I remember the very first time Jacob came to a Galaxy game was actually in Edinburgh, and you know, I struck up a conversation with him because, you know, when he mentioned he was from Boston, I was immediately, oh, that's great, we have things to talk about. Yeah, so, yeah, I've known Jacob since I think the first day he turned up to the game. He then has Zach, who was a really key member of the team. Zach was a fantastic teammate and a good coach and just a technically gifted player. And then now, you know, guys like Gabriel Bailey, Michael Maftian, you know, they are experienced, technically gifted players, but also good coaches and good teammates. So I think the American backbone has always been important to the Galaxy from the days of Luke and before then. But then Galaxy's, we have a really good mix. You know, we have guys from Poland. We've got some guy from Lithuania that you might have heard of. We've got Central American players. There's people from Taiwan over now. There's just a really nice mix of guys with different backgrounds and different experience. But it's always been the North American backbone to the team that's been important.
Absolutely, yeah. And it looks like that backbone has really started to show up again. And like you mentioned there, Brian, like, when you look at Galaxy now compared to the start of the season, they've come on leaps and bounds. I think that the coaching and the experience of those American players, would you agree, has probably been a massive part of that. They've got access to some of the most technically gifted, the newer words players that we have in the league. So that must be a massive boon to these younger or less experienced players that are having to come in to the AAA setup, maybe because of maybe how, you know, because some of the key players that have left, the hole that they've left, has had to be filled in sort of creative ways.
Yeah, I mean, you get guys who are in their first season. You know, we have two players called Kai now, which gets confusing for Galaxy, but there's Cobra Kai and Other Kai, as they're called. So, but, you know, Cobra Kai has been fantastic. You know, he's from Poland. He's the most vocal player I've ever heard at a baseball game, whether he's behind the plate or whether he's on the bench. You just hear Kai's voice coaching and encouraging all the way through. And that really comes across and helps the newer players, and you know, it's just his enthusiasm for the game comes across from the bench or from the catcher's box. And then you take a guy like the Other Kai, who's playing his first year, and he's becoming a really gifted outfielder. You know, he very rarely misses a catch. He's fast in the base paths. He gets on base a lot. And you know, he is. You know, he started the game yesterday. He's becoming a regular part of the Galaxy AAA setup, and you know that. For that to happen for a brand new player who's brand new to baseball, you really need the experience and mentorship from the more experienced players, and it really comes across with Galaxy.
Definitely. Now we've got some comments here. I'm going to read some comments, and then before we move on from Galaxy towards umpiring, I'll give Danny and Jason a chance to ask any questions that they might have. But Roberto Carlos says something different for today. We have a D and a B. Welcome, guys. There's been too much J recently. That's obviously a reference to previously when we had John Linton on. Not only was it all J's, it was all John's at that. Paul Convoy says, my view of the Cannons isn't as easy as that they have the best players. They have had three or four players doing nights fill in with call-ups and have a great team mentality. I mean, I think in order to maintain a kind of consistency that the Cannons have been able to over the course of the season, you need to have a great mentality as a team. We've seen so many times, even in professional baseball, where a so-called super team that's full of superstar free agents goes absolutely nowhere because they don't have that chemistry and that team mentality. I think that's something the Cannons have in spades, and I think that Rury is a massive part of that. I think you would agree, Jason.
Yeah, I mean, Rury's the one that's been around the longest for him, and he's kind of the one that keeps everyone together there, and, you know, bonds well with the new players and can tell the older players kind of, you know, he's in charge and this is how we do things there. So, you know, mad props to Rory for keeping everyone in good spirits and keeping everything positive. Good vibes only.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Jason West says, I wouldn't be so quick to sell the league as so one-sided. Even the Cannons will tell you that in the AAA, it's an any given Sunday kind of league. I apologise, Jason. I wasn't trying to frame it as being super one-sided. I was just basically making the point that they remain undefeated at this point, and it's very unusual that that happens. There's only been probably a handful of teams that have managed to get to this point undefeated. And Jason, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think there's been any team that has managed to go all the way.
I don't think so. I know back in the day, we had one season, we had one loss, we lost to Strathclyde, but off the top of my head, I don't think anyone's got a perfect season.
Yeah, I think the Galaxy had a season where they just had the one loss as well 1 year. He does continue, Jason West. That being said, tremendous congrats to both the Canons AAA and Comets singly on great division titles. Absolutely, yeah. The Canons have wrapped that up this past weekend. The Comets single A team winning their first league championship last Sunday. Fiona Brambley references the red top hat and says, best memory that was. Sounds like you guys had a lot of fun that year, particularly. Paul Convoy just commented, Galaxy were close with one loss in a year. Yeah, I think that might have been 20... Help me out here, Brian. It might have been 2019 season.
I believe so. It was the last of the three.
Yeah, absolute dominance, I think, because that would have been the year you just won the double, the cup and the league. They have beaten the, I believe, the Express in both the league and the cup final, if I remember rightly, if memory serves. That's all the comments for now. Danny, Jason, do you have anything you want to ask Brian about his time with the Galaxy?
All right, you go first, Danny, and I'll jump in next.
Okay, cool. Brian, I just want to pick, obviously, so to go a wee bit more into your time in the Galaxy, you were a second baseman predominantly, and that's quite unusual to see when you have people come in, because usually you have people come in that have no experience and they play the corner outfield. That coupled with the fact you had Jim Sehar at second base, who was just an absolutely tremendous player, and he won, I believe, 2019, the Golden Glove. So how did you come to play second base? Was it a case of that was a position you really liked, or was it a case of you just didn't want to be running? That was too much work for you. You were too lazy to be running in the outfield. Well,
I mean, I guess the game time was limited. So early on, you were playing at right field, occasionally left field. But there'd be opportunities during scrimmage matches or training where coaches would say, take your position. And I was sort of naturally drawn to the infield. I enjoyed playing it more. I felt more involved in the game. Standing in the outfield, again, as I said earlier, first and foremost, I'm a baseball fan. I like to be able to see what's happening, get be involved in the action. Standing in right field for a few hours is not giving you the best view of the action and making you feel involved in the game. So, yeah, I guess without going too deeply into it, I wasn't much of a player, as everyone knows. I wouldn't pretend I was, but I just enjoyed being in the infield and the environment and the camaraderie and the communication with the other infielders. I just enjoyed being there rather than standing on my own in a lonely right field. So I tried to go to second base whenever the opportunities were there.
I mean, we look pitching on the mound as well. I don't think you get a lot in the outfield. Like, you maybe get some dribblers into second base and that, but I didn't see a lot of people barrel look up in the outfield. So that's
going into right field.
Fair enough. I'll let Jason jump in.
Cool. So you were talking about your first at bat, Brian. So you got hit by the pitch. Did you rub it? Or did everyone tell you not to rub it?
I was immediately told not to rub it, so I didn't. You don't really know what to do. Are you supposed to make a deal of it? Are you supposed to not make a deal of it? And I'm just standing there. I didn't even walk towards first base. I just stood there waiting for someone to tell me what to do next.
That's fair enough. Like I said, it's one of those things that come up. All right, well, it hurts, and I want to kind of touch it, but then everyone's telling you not to touch it, not to rub it. You're like, okay, I'll man up and go to first base.
So we have a couple more comments here. Scott Black says, cup wins mean nothing. Well done to the great division champs this year. I mean, I'm not sure I would agree that they don't mean anything. I think the Caledonia Cup, especially nowadays with the postseason format, which I think Paul's actually mentioned underneath, says postseason, and it certainly does mean something. I would have to agree with Paul there. With the postseason format, not everyone gets in, especially at AAA. And I think that in order to win the Classic, you need to basically beat the best all over again. So I think that definitely does mean a lot. And I think a lot's been... We've had a few teams now, or at least the Galaxy in 2019. Last year, I think... Not last year, the year before, the Devils won the league, and the Breakers won a treble, I think, all in, because they won the single A division in both cups.
That was
so
last
like
year.
These cups, yeah, these cups do mean something. Scott's now said, so the division championship means nothing. It's all about the cups. I mean, any silverware that you can play and have a chance at winning, I think, means a lot, especially in a league that's as small as this.
I think the best example of this would be the 2001 Mariners. We won 116 games and then lost. Mm-hmm. What do you think? We'd rather have a World Series than the fact you won 116 games. So, like I said, both mean something to everyone's playing. I guarantee you that everyone plays in the league title means a lot. And when you do postseason, that means a lot to everyone too. So you can't discount the fact that everyone's playing to win.
Can I jump in with that, John? What I will say about the league is that in order to win a league title, you need to be good for, you know, 4 or 5 months of the year where, you can be good for a couple of games and win the cup. And that's not to diminish what getting the cup's all about, because we saw it last year with the Phillies in the major leagues, you know, just went that amazing run at the end and got all the way to the final. And that's great. And that's what it's about. But I think you can take pride. And for me personally, I take a lot of pride and what the Comets have done in the single A this year with being consistently good, because being consistently good in baseball is a really hard thing to do. Being any level of consistently, whether it's consistently bad or consistently okay, is really difficult to do. So when you can, have a bit of consistency for a long period of time, I think there's a lot to that. I think, in light to echo what you guys said, there's a lot to the cup, there's a lot to the league. Both any achievement is great, to be honest.
I mean, I think if Rory was sitting here right now and we asked him, would you take this if you don't get the cup? He would say, absolutely not, I want both. And I think that speaks volumes. You know, both are pretty valuable at the end of the day. If you're not competing to win any trophy that you're in for, then, you know, that's up to you. But I think the key point of having a league set up and a postseason set up is that we all have something to play for. What were you saying, Jason?
I would say I think it's also hard. I mean, people have other responsibilities. You're not going to be there all summer long to do that. You have holidays. If you have kids, they're on holidays there. So, you know, it's hard to win week in, week out. So it's really tough. That's probably why we see a team, dominates for about 3 years and then other responsibilities kick in.
Absolutely. Paul Convoy says, as you should, Danny, both are important in their own way. Let's move off this discussion. It's a good discussion to have, but I think the people that we, like, I think all four of us probably agree that, and I can't speak for you, Brian, but I think all four of us would agree that anything that you play for is valuable and worth trying to get.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you look at last week when the Oilers won their first game of the season. I'm sure they celebrated that as if they'd won the pennant.
That's exactly it. You know, one win can be a massive, can be a massive win to a club. We saw it with the Tayport Bakers in their first season in 2021. They only got their first win toward the end of the year, but then they went on a tear in the postseason. And then we saw what they did last year. They won three trophies, all based off of the momentum that was born out of just that one win toward the end of the season. We play it for fun, but if you can win a trophy, no matter what trophy it is, it's always a good time. Anyway, moving on. So Brian, I don't know how much playing you actually do these days. You've kind of more or less transitioned from playing towards umpiring in recent years.
Officially, I'm on the Galaxy roster. I think still hanging on to my number 34 jersey. David Ortiz. something JT and I spoke to at the start of the season, and I guess I intended to umpire more this year, but at the same time knew there might be weeks where they struggle to put out a team. So I thought it's only reasonable to be rostered, and then if they're short a single A player, then I can step in at right field or pinch runner, just be involved in the game in some way. I've been rostered for the season and I haven't had any game time at all, but I'm quite happy with that.
Yeah, like you say, you've moved towards umpiring. Tell me about, firstly, where your interest in umpiring came from, because I know it's something that you actually take quite seriously.
Does that come across, does it? I guess because I've been a baseball fan for a long time, I sort of know the rules really well. Last year, an opportunity came up that Jason had organised the clinic in Tayport. And it was Thomas Haywood ran it, and it was entirely a practical. It was all done outside on the field. And Ali went up, and I think Fiona went up from Glasgow, and then a few guys from Tayport and Edinburgh were through. And it was just really good. And it was a sort of grounding in not the rules so much, but how to position yourself and where for example, if you're doing the field umpiring, where to position yourself to get the best view of a play at first. So it's fine to know what an out and what safe is at first, but actually getting yourself in the position to make that call was the key to that, and finding your position in the slot to see the plate so you can make the ball and strike calls. So that was really good. It was a sort of all-day thing, and you know, thanks to Jason for organising that. But it wasn't a proper qualification, so we did a little bit of umpiring with that on board, and I guess we felt an obligation that we'd done the course, the club had paid for us to do the course, that if they were short an umpire, we sort of had an obligation to step in and do it. Then this year, they had a proper level six BBF qualification, which caused all sorts of problems when they were trying to set up the course. But essentially, those that went in the clinic had a full day in the classroom with Thomas Haywood presenting an approved BBF teaching program. And there was an exam as part of it as well. And at the end of it, those who passed the exam got a qualification. And it's level six sounds grand, but it's the lowest level qualification. But you feel some achievement, and I guess it puts you in that position where you maybe know a little bit more than the players, and gives you more confidence to go into a game and make calls. So that was nice just to have a piece of paper, which I think when I checked it expires in 2199, so I can be an umpire for the next 180 years.
Brian, tell me a wee bit about sitting under the learning tree with somebody like Thomas Haywood, because he's not only is he a top guy, but he's a tremendous umpire. He's got so much experience all over the world.
Not just experience, but enthusiasm as well. I mean, Thomas, yeah. I got on really well with him, and you know, he'll give up a Sunday just to come and not umpire the game, just to stand behind the backstop and coach the umpires. Mm-hmm. And you know, Ali and I did a game together recently, and Thomas just stood on the sidelines and gave us feedback as we were going through the game. You know, Thomas he recently passed 1,000 career games as an umpire, 1,000 competitive games. He's done a month-long residential course in the States. You know, in terms of experience and qualifications, you know, he's as good as it gets. And you know, we should embrace the fact that we've got someone like that in Scotland prepared to give his knowledge back to us. So, you know, anyone who's interested at all, even just learning the rules better or maybe dabbling in umpiring, then if you have a chance to go on a course run by Thomas, then I would jump at the chance. And, you know, we have a WhatsApp group now. You know, if something happens in a game, you're not sure you've made the right call, or you're not sure what you should have done in that situation, we just post it in the WhatsApp group, and you know, Paul's a member, so he knows what chat's like. Thomas is the first one to come back with feedback and advice on what the right call was, and sometimes he leaves voice messages because he finds it easier to record a voice message explaining the rule rather than trying to put it in a short message in a chat. So yeah, Thomas has been an invaluable source of information and support.
Can I jump in with a question, John?
Absolutely, Danny. Yeah.
Smashing. So Brian, obviously in your personal life, you're a doctor, and as an umpire, there's probably a few similarities. With an umpire, you probably sometimes have to give bad news. You know, sorry, pal, that's strike three. Away and don't darken my doorstep. You're shite, sit on the bench. And I imagine you have to do similar in doctoring. So did you become a doctor in order to become a good umpire? Or did you become an umpire?
I did. I was playing the long game, Danny. So
play the long game.
It was all those years at medical school and things. Really, the goal was to umpire Scottish baseball one day.
That's what I suspected, but we need to ask these questions because it's the type of things the listeners will be thinking but not saying.
But it's a good point, because one of the challenges that I'm in is that, particularly when it's a Galaxy Comets game, is that both benches are friends of mine, and you're trying to be impartial and you're trying to make the right call, and I just get it out of my head. I don't really think about it's Galaxy at bat or it's Comets at bat. I just make the calls as I see them. But you are aware that every call you make, there's growling from one bench and cheers from the other bench, and at the end of the game you just kind of try to put it behind you and hopefully we're all friends again and we're not going to fall out over it. But it's, you know, this is a serious point. There are moments when at the end of a game people that I would consider a friend haven't shook my hand, and you kind of feel, yeah, that's the day, but hopefully by tomorrow that's water under the bridge. But you know, these things are noticeable, and I think it's one of the hard things about being an umpire when you're among a group of friends. So yeah, the message, there are no hard feelings to anyone that I've made calls against, and hopefully the next day we're friends again.
Is there people, Brian? Because obviously, as a player, like you'll see a certain picture on a mound, and you'll be like, "Oh, it's going to be a hard game as a hitter," or you know, there's a lot of things that they can influence the way you hit. But is there pictures on the mound where you're kind of like, "Oh, this guy with his curveballs," and that does it make it more difficult for you? Dependent, is there certain pictures that you find hard to pick up as an umpire? Is what I'm asking.
I think. You know, the occasional guy that throws sidearm or submariner, they're really difficult to pick up just because you're used to being in a set position. You're used to watching the release point from the ball to follow into the strike zone. The ones that cause the most arguments are the breaking balls. And you're a prime example of that, Danny. That curveball you throw this year as your strikeout pitch is just lovely. But, you know, it comes out of your hand straight at their head. So 9 times out of 10, the single-A batters think that's a ball. And it just drops into the zone at the last minute. And you get so many arguments about pitches like that, but it's clearly a strike. And it's, you know, that those are the ones that cause the argument. The fastballs on the edge, you know, that could go either way, but it's the breaking balls that the single A players haven't seen before, that they must look like a ball all the way until the last second. And that's the ones that cause the arguments. So yeah, knowing someone throws good off speed stuff, I know there's gonna be more of a challenge in terms of arguments against the balls and strikes. But even something simple, it comes up time and time again, the number of guys who don't actually know the strike zone. And your Paul's, I think, watching tonight, he kind of held a teaching session in Edinburgh about exactly what constitutes the strike zone. He said he was really surprised how many players who've been playing for several years don't actually know the definition of the strike zone. And it's yeah, that causes arguments, and people are arguing over a strike zone that they don't actually know the definition of.
Well, I mean, we just, you know, the best way to deal with that is just to shout abuse for the bench, surely, or come up and just, you know, be aggressive towards you. And that should sort it right out, Brian. I imagine umpires quite like that. So
It's the growl from the batter. That's the worst one. You just hear, some guys are very good at growling when you make the call.
Fair enough.
Brian, you've umpired, I think, primarily single A games to this point. However, you have, I think, stepped in to umpire some Triple A games, if I'm not mistaken. Talk me through some of the differences, because obviously it's entirely different speed, it's entirely different ability level. Talk to me about some of the differences that us players who have never been behind the plate in a game situation like that might not ever pick up.
So there are pluses and minuses. You know, the plus is you don't get hit by the ball as much because you've got a good catcher and you've got a pitcher who's more likely to be throwing strikes or throwing the ball where the catcher's expecting it to be. So I very rarely get hit by a ball unless it's a foul ball back. But very rarely get hit in Triple A, whereas in Single A you get hit all the time just because there's a lot of wild pitches and the catcher's not set up where the pitcher's throwing. I guess in Triple A there's a lot more off-speed stuff. So you're having to be more aware of the off-speed pitches rather than just, you know, lots of fastballs. I probably find calling balls and strikes a bit easier with Triple A than I do Single A because I guess the pitches are more consistent. The catchers are better at catching the ball, I guess. But from that point of view, probably calling balls and strikes is easier for Triple A. The difficulty with Triple A is that things happen more quickly. And particularly if you're in a one-man system, you're trying to watch. I know Danny said in the podcast last week that when there's not a lot happening in the field, there's actually an awful lot happening in the field. You're trying to be aware of everything that's happening with very clever players, experienced players, all knowing the situation. And things, you know, plays can develop very, very quickly when players are turning double plays, pick-offs, etc. Things can happen very quickly at Triple A, whereas in Single A, the speed of the game is slower and you have more time to make calls and kind of judge what's happening. So, yeah, I don't, that's a longer answer than maybe you're expecting, but calling balls and strikes, I think, is easier. Calling stuff that's happening in the field is more challenging just because it's happening at a much faster pace.
Now, do you see yourself being involved in umpiring at both levels of Scottish baseball as a long-term thing? I know that we've mentioned Thomas Haywood. He's reached over 1,000 competitive games as an umpire. Do you see umpiring as your role now, or do you intend to go back to playing more often at some point?
I don't think I'll ever play again, to be honest. This will be me tonight officially announcing my retirement. So,
21.99. Till then, Brian. Till 21.99.
But yeah, it's you know, I was only rostered this year as an afterthought, so I honestly don't see myself ever playing again. I'll turn up to scrimmages, I'll turn up to training because I enjoy doing it, and it's sociable and everyone's a friendly bunch, and it's fun turning up to training with these guys. But I don't think I'll ever actually play again. But, you know, we've got enough umpires now that the goal is to have a two-man system for every game and have it more formalised, so that rather than just a random, you know, manager's trying to contact an umpire the day before the game saying, are you available, that it would actually be done centrally, and there'll be an allocation of a two-man system to travel to each game. And if there's a single A, triple A, then they'll swap over, so the plate umpire will take the field for the second game. So I think the goal ultimately is that that's a formalised arrangement, and it will be taken away from the clubs to organise umpires, that the committee or the Baseball Scotland will decide who's umpiring each game. I think that's healthy, because, you know, someone turning up in Glasgow every week to umpire the same teams is just not a healthy arrangement. I think you have to mix it up and mix up your crews, so you don't have the same two guys working together all the time. Mix up the location so that you don't have the same person going to Aberdeen all the time. I think that's got to be healthy for the game in the future.
I would absolutely agree, but I think that's brilliant news, and hopefully that's something that we can lock in for next season and expand on. You know, you never know, we might even have full umpire crews someday if there's enough interest, but that's great to hear. What I will say though, never say never on the planes. I mean, I've said how many times that I'm
going to retire, John.
I've tried to retire, I think, four seasons in a row. It's Danny's fault, really, that I ended up playing this year.
And you just came back to score that important run in the last game.
The four pad on runs for padding, they were just for show. Scott Black says, league organised umpires, what's next? League supplies baseballs. I'm not quite sure that Baseball Scotland's at the level yet where we are going to have a centralised vault full of baseballs at this point, but you never know. Maybe someday.
Several dozen in the grass at Tayport behind the backstop.
See, I always thought it would be a cool idea to get the Baseball Scotland logo on the balls, but you have to buy like 400, so it's a lot of money to spend on some baseballs.
Yeah, you've had a bit of experience of purchasing said balls, haven't you, Jason? And they were not cheap.
No, they were cheap. They're not cheap now. Gosh, they are expensive. So yeah, but we used to buy all the balls for all the teams at the beginning of the year, and then hope that was enough to last the season.
It never is, especially in Glasgow with the trees, or like you say, Brian Tayport with the bit behind the backstop. That's more or less it for tonight. Danny, Jason, do you guys have anything else you want to ask Brian before we go?
I've got, Brian, it's nothing to do with umpiring or Galaxy, but if you're up for it, you did mention you're a Boston fan, and I've got a Boston Red Sox quiz, and I'll wager you on it, right? If you can go three for three, well, see if you get one wrong, I want you to turn up to the training in a Yankees jersey, but if you get them all right, that's nothing for that. Just could.
If you get them all right, Danny Quinn will wear a Boston Red Sox hat on the next show.
Nah,
well, I will make it happen.
If you give me one, maybe. Right, Brian. Three questions. You up for it?
Of course. Go.
Right. Test your Boston fandom here. Okay. Now, question number one: the Boston Red Sox famously made it to the ALCS in a 2003 campaign. Their season concluded with an 11-inning walk-off home run from which historic franchise?
I could name the player, Danny.
Who's the player?
Aaron Boone.
Yeah, it was. Who's the pitcher?
I can't remember the pitcher, really. And I can't remember.
It was Wakefield. It was a knuckleball. Oh, was it? And it was a knuckleball. Yeah, so yeah, you knew that.
I can't remember. I cannot remember who Boone played for.
No. Okay, well, we'll go to question number two. Boston Red Sox famously became one of the first modern era MLB teams to play here in the UK in 2019 when they were humiliated and swept by which historic franchise? Think on it if it comes to you. We'll go for question number
three. I was at both games as well, and it's just not coming to me at all, Danny.
Weird that. Question number three is: the Boston Red Sox famously held a 14.5 game division lead in the summer of their 1978 campaign. However, their season came down to a one-game playoff in which they were bested by the eventual World Series champions. It was Bucky Dent and Reggie Jackson, I believe, hit the home runs from which historic franchise?
Bucky fucking Dent.
That's the very one. So, you know what? You can think on it, Brian.
Yeah, I'll email you later, Danny, once I've...
Oh, dear. Danny's never getting to do a quiz again. thank you so very much for joining us, Brian. Jason, did you have anything else for Brian?
I was going to say, so now that you've announced your retirement, your last at-bat, did you pull a Ted Williams?
I can't actually remember my last at-bat. It was a long time ago.
Okay, fair enough. And then I got a question for everyone here. Well, since we're talking Red Sox, Yankees, how many players have played for both teams?
Quite a few.
That's quite a few. But
I'll go.
David Wells, David Cohn.
You're going to need more of your fingers and toes, John.
Yeah. No, I'm just trying to think. I'm going to take a stab in the dark and say 63.
I'm going to go higher. Yeah,
I'll go as high as that. I'll say 32.
I'm going to go closer to 100.
The answer is 243.
Oh, wow. Okay. It's more than I would have thought.
Yeah.
It's a far cry from football, isn't it? We are like rivals in football. You just don't see it happen very often. It's considered sacrilege, but it's not really considered sacrilege in baseball to play for one team. And then
unless you're Johnny Damon.
I mean, you got to think of all the kind of, you know, relief pitchers that I've played through there. Yeah. So it's one of those things I've been playing.
Ramiro Mendoza, this one.
What's that?
Ramiro Mendoza went to the Red Sox after the list of Yankees.
Yeah. I mean, guys, I could list all 243, but we don't have time for that. So
tell you what, we'll start next week's show with that. Thank you so very much for joining us, Brian. It's been an absolute pleasure speaking to you. All the best with your umpire moving forward. And final question for me, are you going to the Rosenborg game on Thursday?
I can't, but I wish I could.
I'm going to be working, so unfortunately I'll be missing that as well. But good hearts, man, as well, Brian.
Yep. I remember seeing someone at Tynecastle with a Comets hat on. I thought, there's only one person at my
I remember that, I remember you basically grabbing my shoulders and going, Comets are shite, and I absolutely shat it because I had no idea who it would have been. I was like, who the fuck's that? I thought I was going to get my head kicked in. But no, it was good old Brian. Good to see you that day, and hopefully I'll see you at Tynecastle at some point through the season. And I'll definitely see you in Glasgow for a game at some point. Let's quickly, before we get moving, we'll go into the schedule for this coming Sunday. It's week 21 of the season. We're getting to sort of the final stretch. It's 20th of August, and the games are Granite City Oilers down in Glasgow at the Comets. Danny, are you going to be at that one?
No, I'll be in New York. I'll be watching a historic franchise versus the Boston Red Sox. So,
well, I mean, let's be honest, Danny, you'll be watching a historic franchise likely piss all over themselves as they've been doing all season. that's going to be a great experience, though. Hopefully Giancarlo will hit one out your way. And elsewhere, the Glasgow Galaxy are going back up to Tayport for another game against the Breakers as well. And in Single A, I believe the single game of Single A this week, is Glasgow Galaxy at the Tayport Breakers in the Single A division. We've crowned both our division champions for this year. At this point, what we're playing for is how the postseason is going to look. Who will the champion Comets face in the first round of the Single A Caledonia Cup? Who will the Cannons face in the first round of the Caledonia Cup in the Triple A? So there's a lot still to play for. Join us next time. We will hopefully have another great guest. And Danny, I think you should be back on the show with us again as well.
Yeah, should be.
Perfect. Thank you for watching, and we will catch you next time. Bobby Binnie here.